Well, we're here at the University of Notre Dame. I'm here with Father Bob Pelton, a Holy Cross father who's worked much of his life down in Latin America. And I thought it would be great to interview him on Francis, Pope Francis, since he comes from Latin America. So, Bob, let's get your insights on this new Pope of ours.
All right. I'm happy to do it. I was present in the same meeting that he was at 2007 in Aparecida in Brazil, which the fifth conference of the Latin American bishops, as they followed through from Vatican II. And Francis was a key person, but he certainly was not in his participation a grandstander. In other words, he was the chair of the writing committee for the final document, for the press conferences, which actually were done very well. I don't recall his having appeared so much, but he was doing his work and evidently gained the respect of the key people there. Of course, it was as I understand it, it was a group of Latin American bishops and a few U.S. bishops that got together and promoted his cause. I'm talking about the new Pope Francis. There has a book that's just come out, this book is Francis Untying the Knots, and in the London Tablet of last week and the London Tablet of yesterday, which would be Saturday the 17th, is a two-part sort of resume of the book. And the thing is, the first is a rather strong critique of his actuation as the provincial of the Jesuits of Argentina. One needs to read that article, I think, and read the book itself, which is available through Amazon. And the article that's just appeared now has to do with his transformation pastorally, spiritually, and I think from an ecclesial point of view, because of when he became the Cardinal of Buenos Aires, he established the custom of going on Sundays to the slums. He'd take the bus, and people call him Padre Jorge, and he entered into an entirely different type of reality pastorally than he'd experienced as a Jesuit provincial. And so the point is transformation that people might say was I think the record will show, is ideologically conservative. And then some would say he became pragmatic pastorally. I personally think it's more accurate to say, as you look at his homilies now and all that, that it wasn't just pragmatism, but I think it was conviction of the word. That's at least my impression at the moment. But in any case, I don't want to necessarily talk quite a bit about the two Jesuits that I think most people follow the history and so forth that he did have some difficulties with. One now is deceased and the other is in Germany at the moment, I believe. But in any case, they had difficulties with him at the beginning of the Dirty War of Argentina, 76 to 83, and they were exiled, and both finally were brought back from Paraguay, and one had questions about the relationship and with the society, and the other had a reconciliation, the one in Germany, with the cardinal. But the point being that how about this transformation? And I think all of us hope and pray that it is a transformation perhaps parallel to that of Archbishop Romero. I would think that Romero had a tougher project when trying to have the Spirit reform him, because Romero, over a period of years, was pretty uptight, rather scrupulous. He did work with excellent psychotherapists in Mexico, and he was courageous in accepting his own shortcomings and what he needed to do pastorally, ecclesially, in his contact with the poor, and psychologically. And so I think that he made it. And I hope that he can intercede for our present Holy Father Francis in his own efforts. So in any case, what I'd like to say is I'd like to see them march together, and it, let it be a win-win for those two great pastoral people and for our church, which we love, and which we want to see moving into a real biblical track of real and true commitment. So I know we've got challenges. We've got a lot of prayer going. It's been a long session with lay people affiliated with Notre Dame. Husbands and wives wanted to know about Francis, and sincere, committed people, and people who, as a matter of fact, people who take this seriously in terms of what our church has to do at this time.
What did you just discuss last night?
Well, what we discussed is the readings, particularly on Francis. Uh-huh. Because the word is now out, at least among communicators like yourself, the word is out. Even at the beginning, there were questions about how did he relate to the Dirty War, 76 to 83. And you will recall that the Chilean Revolution, when the general and Pinochet and others came in, which began in 73, when it began in 73 when Salvador Allende was committed suicide. So in any case, I think what it had to do with was the fact that those who really wanted change in Chile, that was a process that took 17 years. That was 73 to about 89 or so. I think that they also wanted quicker action in Buenos Aires, 76 to 83, and they moved in very harshly, the military, and that's where these two young Jesuits got caught up, and lots of people were picked up, probably a much harsher beginning of their revolution than the one in Chile was. So there's a difference, because in Chile it was common for priests to be out in the slums, in the barrios, and doing what those two Jesuits were doing in Argentina. But the leadership of the Argentinian church was a different one, different circumstances. And so when the one Jesuit, Orlando, when he went to Paraguay and came back, he made the decision that he would leave the Jesuits, became a diocesan priest in the Diocese of Quilmes, which is a workers' diocese right next to Buenos Aires. And the bishop's name there was Novak, N-O-V-A-K. And Novak was one of the few bishops that stood up against the military regime in Argentina at that time, in contrast with Chile. Not saying right or wrong, I'm just saying different circumstances, but parallel pressures. And so I had permission from Bishop Novak to interview the young Jesuit priest. And the priest was on retreat. He received me warmly. He knew that I was coming. We spent 3 hours together. I think he was a fine priest. He became a model for diocesan priests, at least of that diocese. He was not bitter about the gentleman who had been his provincial, but he didn't agree. And so those were the earlier years of the provincial, of the Jesuits, and one will see in the book actually that there are Jesuits, even contemporary Jesuits, who don't want their names to be given. One who's a provincial in Latin America right now who has said that, you know, it was tough when he was our provincial. It describes the book more details. But in any case, I think there's a transformation. Now, am I a kind of naive about it? I don't think I am. But I say we're all in this game, people of God, and we have to pull together. And let's try to support this gentleman who has let himself be open to the reality of his poor people in Argentina, and he said this publicly. So I think that we can be proud of him, but we can also question him when we do it and do it appropriately, and we can ask things that need to be asked. So I hope we can follow the Romero track of real conversion.
Yeah.
And I'm not even with Romero. A lot of the campesinos, they just call him San Romero, and they're not worrying too much about a process. And I'm not showing disrespect for a process. I just want to see this pastoral leader, Romero, respected for his pastoral leadership, and with the same type of pastoral leadership, I hope and pray that Francis will provide us with under the guidance of the Spirit and his own commitment to the gospel.
Yeah. You think he'll be a man of action in regards to the poor?
Yes, I think so. I believe, I guess October is a big month for him because that's when his committee of nine are supposed to join together and talk about the reorganization of the Roman Curia. And as I understand it, I believe there's only one actual member of the Curia who's part of that, and he's trying to seemingly have independence. I think he's being called to action, and I think we're calling him to action with respect. And we know that he's a bright person. He had all his theology before Vatican II, he's being called to change as we all are.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope he can make it. I'm grateful. I had my formation before Vatican II, but I had the opportunity to do two things. One is to work on the last session with Cardinal Soonens of Belgium in regard to the renewal of the religious life, last session of Vatican II, 65. And then I worked with Cardinal Silva. I was his Episcopal vicar in Santiago, Chile, one of the great cardinals of Latin America during Vatican II and after Vatican II. And that gave me hope that these things can be done if we work together with transparency and honesty and straightforwardness. And so it's a call to action and a kind of a new way of understanding it.
No, I agree with you because I'm pre-Vatican II and came through it and I saw both sides.
Yeah.
And the transformation was amazing.
Yeah.
And had we followed through a little better, I think it would have even been more amazing.
Sure.
But it came on so fast. But all the good things that came out of Vatican II, we had a new catechetical center.
Sure.
We had salvation history. We brought in scholars. And then my seminary background was somewhat weak until it got bolstered by that because we were in an old system that was sort of, you couldn't think beyond that system where all of a sudden now we were talking psychologically speaking, we were talking scripturally speaking, that scripture was a lot more opened and a lot of scholars were now resurfacing in the Bible Today from St. John's.
Sure.
So, no, it was a great time.
But one of the great things to do, I think, is to do a parallel between what Francis, as Jesuit provincial, and then a little bit later in his early time as Archbishop Cardinal, but then he changed, he's telling people don't be involved with the slum folk. And then you check his statements, which I've done, which he gave to the key leaders of the Latin American bishops when he was just in Brazil a few weeks ago. And he's saying just the opposite. He's saying we've got to be a church of the poor. We have to get out there and really experience what they're experiencing. We have to listen more carefully. We have to let ourselves be transformed. And he wasn't saying the same thing. And I'm not saying he's a double talker. I'm saying there's obviously a change going on within
conversion.
The church. And that happened to Romero, too.
Yeah.
And both of these people, like what Romero did, Romero was basically influenced. He was unhappy with Medellin. But then he started to study the Evangelii Nuntiandi, evangelization of people, a great document of Paul VI. And that started to influence him. Then he started to open up. And then he started to walk with the poor. And then he started to get out there and get mud on his sandals and stuff, you know. And so we have a chance.
Well, you know, something similar like happened when Cardinal Dearden,
yeah,
who was really tough. Man.
Iron John.
And
yeah,
he went to the council and he came back. He was a completely different person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody was like, boy.
Sure.
And he, in the latter part of his life, he inspired a lot of people because of that conversion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I can remember even the Bishop H.O.C.H. of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. That's where my mother came from. And Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He, during the council, the Latin American bishops would get with the Brazilians, the Chileans, the people from Louvain, and all these extra things. And if you didn't get involved in some of the extracurricular, you didn't get fired up in the same way as those who did it. Well, this hawk from, you know, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you know, farm country, all that kind of thing, and Hawk really got into it, and then he drove me around after the council was over. He drove me around the whole diocese to speak with the religious, whole little diocese, but drove me around himself, because he said, I want you to transmit, to communicate, dialogue with these people about the real significance, the pastoral reality of the council. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I wish I do respect our U.S. bishop. I would have wished that they would have gotten more into the council than some of the other groups did. But we have to take the reality that it is, and let's move with what the Spirit calls us to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's just one thought, and it's in bang. And I think you got to give the Holy Spirit credit all of a sudden.
Oh, sure.
Boom.
There's yeah.
a different feeling, and they see things that, and maybe down deep all during their life, they were yearning for this.
Waiting for it.
They were locked in because of the system locking
them,
sure. All of a sudden it breaks loose.
Sure, sure. Right. So I think there is reason to be hopeful and to act courageously and to be prophetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a word I remember after Vatican II that was really used a lot.
Yeah.
It was, but now you don't hear it too much.
Yeah, yeah.
The word prophetic is sort of like, eh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay, great talking with you. I'm getting these calls, I'm sorry that they happened, but
no,
it shows that I'm trying to earn my breakfast.
I think we might have